Welcome to the CEN show, the voice of the world community. On Monday, 2 days ago, we had Professor Amin-Ra and historian Joe Hembrick, and they had a show discussing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the Civil Rights Movement. And I want to encourage everyone to check that show out. It was very good show, and we talked a good a little time about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the great things he did for us. So I just want to show you how to access the show. If you go to YouTube and go to a Community Education Network, you can access the show there. Let me show you. Share the screen. Give me a moment here. This is our channel right here. And here it is. Conscious Corner, Dr. Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement. We could pull it up. And here it is. So you can access it that way. And also, you can access it on our website. Here is the how anybody can get in and see our shows. And this is how you could have came on Monday if you want to come, where it says join Zoom meeting here. And this is our show this evening, where you could put join Zoom meeting here. And that's how you can visit us on our shows. You can actually participate. But if you go to the podcast section on the website, and here it is, it'll be the first show that comes up. And that's how you can access the show. This is audio. Okay. Stop sharing. Okay, so now I want to introduce myself. I'm a Roski Mascagni, and we've been doing this show for 2 years, and Professor Amin-Ra and Joe Hembrick been doing their show for a little over a year and a half. And like I said before, you could join us anytime you like. It's open to the public. And also, I would like to introduce the panel. We have Professor Amin-Ra here from the Conscious Corner show. These are a regular member of our organization. We got historian Joe Hembrick of the Conscious Corner show. He's here. And we also have one of our other members, Sister Linda out of Florida, which is a very good contributor to our shows and our website. So I'm happy that they're here this evening. And now I would like to introduce our guest for this evening. We have Dr. Ife Jai. And the title of the show this evening, her topic is Hip Hop Centricity and Culturally Sustaining Pedagogy. I met Dr. Ife Jai through her uncle, Professor Akinyele Omawale Moja, which is a good friend of Professor Amin-Ra and Joe Hembrick. And I'm happy she's here with us this evening. Good evening, Dr. Ife Jai. How are you? And can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, and then you can start your presentation.
All right, right on. Thank you for having me.
Welcome.
Hello to everyone who's on the Zoom with us. I was telling the brother that one thing the pandemic taught me is that you want to still have human being something when you're online. So I'm so glad that there are people on this Zoom. And it ain't just a small party, but it's a nice little size party. So hello to everyone. My name is Ife Jai. I'm still getting used to saying Dr. Ife Jai. It still is something that's new to come off of my mouth. My students call me Dr. J, so I like that. So My name is Ife Jai, but I go by Dr. Jane. That's what my students call me. But I am what I consider to be a hip hop artist, a hip hop scholar, and a hip hop activist. Hip hop is something that I adore, and I'm very biased, and I have no problem being a subjective researcher. I think that sometimes you have to know what you're talking about to know what you're talking about. I have a different type of pedagogical framework when it comes to even research. I did not know. This is my daughter in the back, by the way, if it is distracting. There's another person in the room. But I didn't know that you could go to school to research hip hop culture. But I was fortunate to be a part of a wave of discipline, of production that allowed people like me to exist, where we could research hip hop music and culture. And so every time I went to school, I've always spent time to look at the culture from many angles. So the first angle that I looked at hip hop at was through what I called Africanisms in hip hop music and culture. And I did this as a McNair scholar at Georgia State University. This is when I was under the tutelage of Dr. Akinyele Umoja. He was one of the kind of unspoken pioneers of hip hop research because he recognized the value of the culture. He and I later talked about the impact of the Los Angeles riots on hip hop music and culture, and how that display of revolutionary action from something like police brutality was a huge indicator of how powerful hip hop music could be. And there was a lot of shift that happened around that time in the music and the culture, if you look at the wave of how it developed over the years. But as I began to look at the Africanisms in hip hop music, it taught me that many of what we do, much of what we've done, is present in the culture that we call hip hop, that it was a multifaceted cultural tradition, that it had many elements. And over time, I started to develop that idea. So later, I started to look at hip hop as a means of social resistance and how people use the music and the culture as a form of activism. And I saw so many examples from not only the United States, but also around the world, which also gave light to the impact of the Los Angeles riots and the music industry and so many other factors that shifted hip hop music in the way that we see it now to what we see now. So there, I would argue, are deliberate things that have undermined hip hop music and culture, much in the way that we see things that have undermined the Black revolutionary struggle of the 60s and the 70s through COINTELPRO and other means of implicit sabotage to the potential of something. Okay. So with that being said, I did still discover that there are so many artists that do exist that still believe that the culture can be used to promote political ideals. And so I wrote about that, which we've published in a book just recently that I'm proud to be a part of. And then finally, when I was at UCLA, I started to look at how hip hop is applicable to the classroom because I saw that much of the culture that was presented in regular traditional Eurocentric curriculum was in need of a cultural alternative. And as I started to understand the magnitude of what hip hop is, because hip hop is so diverse, it's phenomenal. It's beautiful and it will move you once you know what you're looking at and you understand why it's been corrupted in the way that it is now. It will break your heart when you understand the potential of hip hop music, okay? But as I say this, I say that, we have to have a counterculture in our schools. And I offer hip hop as a potential counterculture, not the counterculture. I think that there are many. I just offer hip hop as a potential. So much of my research has throughout the years been about the music, the culture, our liberation in some kind of way. And so that's who I am. And that's why I have the letters behind my name, because of hip hop music. And I am an artist and I love what I do. You know what I'm saying? I feel like some of us have to speak about its essence in many platforms because it's many people that need to be able to be exposed to the same sentiment that if it's not used for our liberation, it will be used for our destruction. So we have to be mindful and we have to claim it and reclaim it again.
I like that name, Dr. J. Can I share something with the audience, please?
Sure.
I want you to check this out.
Why you didn't play the regular video? Oh man, you got me going. That's
I
my
just
jam.
wa I just wanted to share that a little bit. That's my favorite song
Oh,
by
right
you,
on. That's
Black August.
hey, shouts out to Asada. Free Matulu, he's home. He's home. Matulu Shakur is home. Who would have known? We would never thought we have seen the day, but the day has come. And then shouts out to Jonathan and George Jackson. You know what I mean? And of course, Angela Davis with the fro hiding the guns. That's what they say. I don't know.
But
But
yeah,
yeah.
that has a nice beat, and Black
Yeah,
August
thanks.
is beautiful. So,
Have you seen the
yeah.
video though? The actual music video?
No, I have to see it, but I'll look at it. But I just wanted to give them a little taste of if I was to listen to some hip hop, it would be something like
Well, I
that.
like to say that I was a part of a really profound mu a wave of hip hop music in Atlanta. We were very much inspired by Dead Prez, who had released the album called Revolutionary But Gangsta Grills by DJ Drama. This was a huge shift in hip hop culture because they were the conscious group, but they had partnered with the street guy. DJ Drama was known for his mixtapes and his underground trap boy kind of contribution as a producer. So to couple these two sounds created a whole birth of subgenre that we call revolutionary but gangster. You feel me? But that because that movement was so inspiring, it was so like delicious that there were so many people who wanted to speak to it. So as a revolutionary bred baby, there was a moment where it made sense that I would take up this type of music, and I was surrounded by it, by the wave of it. So a lot of that birth and made sense for me to make songs like Black August and a lot of the music that I, at the end of the day, have made. You know, it all has a intention of being somehow liberatory. So that's me as a hip hop artist. I'm glad that you gave the people an example. And then as an activist, you know, I've been a member of the Malcolm X grassroots movement for a very long time. And I usually help and support them in the efforts of events. That's been my passion and the way that we reach the community for a lot of awareness raising, fundraising, you know, just various community building type of gatherings. You feel me? So the Malcolm X Festival in Atlanta, I was privileged to do that for several years. I recently did the Matulu Shakur benefit concert, which was just for raising funds, which we are always doing at matulushakur.com. You know, but I like to be able to use music also to bring people together. So that's my passion as a hip hop activist. And usually the coming together is for a purpose. You see what I'm saying? So it's not just a coming together to drink and to eat and to just be whatever. It's to focus our energy on something of value for our struggle and our liberation. You feel me? So that's how I show up as a hip hop activist, which is something that I love to do as well. So that's me in a nutshell. So I love talking my talk. Can I cuss on this platform? This is Zoom at the end of the day, but this for, family, friends.
We don't really use profanity.
Okay.
We
Tell me now.
just a
Ooh.
little bit, but
Tell me now. I got a
we
potty
kind
mouth.
of
You got to forgive me. I am a rapper and I don't have no problem in saying that. You feel me? But I respect the space. I know how to control my tongue.
well, I mean, we kind of G-rated, but
I say less.
if you
Say less.
did say something that was kind of profane as in language, we wouldn't crucify you for
Say less.
that.
Say less. Say less.
Okay. But continue.
Yeah, so that's how I show up. Hip hop artist, hip hop scholar, hip hop activist. Excuse me, those are the things that I love to do. I love to.
Can you tell us about the title of the topic of the show a little bit? Kind of specify what you mean by hip hop centricity and culturally sustained pedagogy.
Yes, hold on just one second. Don't know why. My throat just got dry. Ooh, excuse me. Yeah, so hip hop centricity is something that I use as a term to refer to the magnitude of which people have used hip hop in the classroom. So hip hop in the classroom is not something that I, so it was something that was already being used and something that had already been practiced and mastered. And so many different people use it in so many different ways that, excuse me, that there wasn't one term to talk about it all. And so as I started to research it, I started to see that because it was so many different things, it would have been ridiculous because, as someone who is a researcher, you would have to refer to these things and every single thing that you do when you're referring to these things. Do you feel me? So it would have been so excessive to talk about them that I said a term was needed to be able to talk about all of it in one notion, in one wave. And so that's what I mean when I say hip hop centricity. It's the magnitude of which you use hip hop in the classroom. And that includes hip hop practices. Like, for instance, in hip hop music and culture, you have the use of the cipher. That's something that people use when we share and freestyle or dance or just gather, which is a Africanism that I would argue that is a part of our African diasporic identity that is sometimes subconscious but manifests in the behaviors that we do. So the circle is something that you see as an iteration in several spaces where African diasporic people exist. So within hip hop, if I were to use the circle in my classroom, this would be yet an extension of hip hop centricity because this would be a hip hop practice that I now embody in my classroom. So that could be using a circle when I do an activity, using a circle in the formation of my classroom, using a circle to engage students in some kind of subject matter and some kind of content. So hip hop practices is one form of hip hop centricity. And then hip hop content, literature. There's people who would call movies, archival pieces, magazines, photos, media, CDs, rap lyrics, all of this would fall into the category of hip hop content. And that is a wide range of things as well. And so, again, hip hop practices, hip hop content. These are the things that are kind of the makeup of hip hop centricity. And those things individually are very diverse. So that is one angle of the title. The other angle, should I continue?
Yes.
Okay. The other angle of the title, I'm not used to people just letting me talk my talk. So this is, I'm like, let me know if I'm talking too much for real. Okay, so the other angle of the title is talking about culturally sustaining pedagogy. So what is that? People use culturally relevant pedagogy often, and that's very familiar to many of us. And we see it show up in a way that the people who wrote it didn't necessarily approve of. It's become kind of watered down and washed up. But they intended it for it to be something that empowered students, that made them critically thinking, that made them engaged in things outside of the classroom, even, but had a larger purpose. Unfortunately, its application over time hasn't necessarily shown that to be true. And that's a part of what happens to ideas once they're rolled out and people start putting their own spin on them and their own twist on them and making them fit the system in the way that makes them comfortable. It changes over time. And so there's now a movement where they recognize, or some people have recognized, that they had what was called a culturally responsive pedagogy. And culturally responsive pedagogy basically said, if it's a plural classroom, make sure that you teach to a plural multicultural space, so that there's many versions of everything. Do you feel me? So that there's many versions of civil rights leaders, for instance, not just the typical Martin Luther King, but that you get the Ella Bakers maybe, and the members of SCLC, and not just the Rosa Parks, but the other members of the Montgomery boycott movement, bus boycott movement. You feel me? So that is another thing that people started to build on. And then finally, there were some folks that were bold enough to say, how about this? Because white supremacy is so strong, and the way that this curriculum is so corrupt, and the way that these children show up, everything that they do still leans to this moment of them performing this thing called whiteness. Because at the end of the day, we are still using these platforms to get them to pass the test or to get them to perform at a certain model in a certain way. And these people kind of called that out. And they said that we need to now think about the things that these students bring to the table. And we need to teach them how to sustain those things that have already worked, the things that they have already mastered, the things that they have already somewhat been familiar with, but really need to cultivate. Because our superpowers as African people show up in many different ways that others can't see. So while you have a student that other people are afraid of, for instance, that got out of jail because he did some, gangster shit when he was young, excuse me, when he did some gangster stuff when he was young, there's teachers like myself that will say, just give him something to do. Just give him something to do. Why? The rest of y'all is really afraid of this young man, but he don't bother me. Come on up here. Come on up here, because there's a part of our young people that need to be identified that it's okay. You okay? We okay? You all right? You see what I'm saying? Like, the schools have to be a safe haven. There's some of us that literally have to be like what a woman named Bettina Love calls like a part of the abolitionist movement. Those teachers that will help our children go to the next level easily and with smooth passage. You feel me? So there's a moment.
Question. So you're saying basically meet them where they are and bring them up.
Meet them where they are. So I had a student just recently that did not know really how to read. And I was like, cool, don't worry. We're gonna practice reading, and you safe with me. So let's get it. And of course, him being in a space where he couldn't run away, he didn't want to run away, he felt like I was genuine, hopefully enough, where he was like, I'm gonna be vulnerable enough. And he read every day, every time we met, every time we had class, and he didn't fight me on it. And he did good by the time we ended class. So it is about sustaining the things also that students do well. So what one of the things that we do well that I know is talk. So at some point in your class period, you got to have opportunity for your students to talk. They need to talk. They have to have time to talk. It's a part of what we do. It's a part of what, if you're teaching black and brown children, you got to give them a time to talk. If you really slick, it just to be in the morning. It just to be in the morning. They get a little time where they could just come in and get some shit up, stuff off their chest and be able to talk. You know what I'm saying? And then you can have them for the rest of the day or the rest of the time, and they with you. So it's sustaining things that I think that are yet to be identified, but things that I know from my own personal journey that work because I have spent a lot of time around our people. And I know when we gather the things that we like. You know what I'm saying? I give thanks for just excuse me, for knowing what that's like. Music, good weather, good times, good energy, good vibration, good conversation, something that makes us feel strong, something that makes us feel empowered. Teaching African American history is a powerful subject. You don't want people to feel like they are a part of the problem. You want them to see that they are a part of a solution at all times. So when we talk about slavery, I have to talk about Nat Turner. We do never, never talk about slavery without talking about Nat Turner. Without usually talking about slavery, I have to talk about Mansa Musa. I have to tell you what was before was Timbuktu, and the universities of, I think it's Sao Tome and Principe. There's moments where we have to talk about all of the things if we're going to talk about African history, because you're talking about our identity. And so, you start seeing that knowledge really is powerful. So if we use something that reaches our young people, that makes them feel empowered, and also, for instance, to be honest with you, our language. And forgive me for cursing so much, because I curse. And I curse in my class, and I tell my students, forgive me, because every now and again it's going to come out, and I don't mean no disrespect. You see what I'm saying? But I was taught not to code switch a long time ago. And what makes me smart is not the way that I talk, it is the way that I read. You see what I'm saying? That I know what I'm talking about, that I've done the work. You feel me? So I appreciated the people that were showing me how to show up as a scholar. This was my interpretation of it, surely. So they can't necessarily stand by, condone, or whatever, the things that I say or do. But they inspired me to be able to be my authentic self. And so I'm from South Central Los Angeles. I grew up on 51st and Dinker. I went to Crenshaw High School. I never was supposed to necessarily go to UCLA. I don't know how I ended up UCLA, but my spirit is strong and it guided me thus far. And there's a moment where you start seeing this is why you do what you do. Because now, as a professor at Trey Tech, I love these students. I love being able to be in this space. And I know that there's a moment where if you have the right teacher that can teach you the right things, or at least give you the tools to be able to think in a way that's different, that it could be life-changing. It could be life-transforming. So that is how I connect hip-hop centricity to culturally sustaining pedagogy, because there's so many things in hip hop that we already do, that we already do. Like ciphers, for instance, the way we talk, the colorfulness of our vocabulary, the way that we give feedback, the way that we, get samples of things that are outside of our classroom to make sense inside of our classroom. These are all elements of hip hop music and hip hop culture. And so I connect those dots. That's a part of what I think makes us great. The way that we start learning how we learn. And I think hip hop culture has a lot of elements that capture how we learn as a collective, as a people.
That sounds beautiful to me, I tell you.
Yeah.
it seems powerful. And I think I learned a little something tonight. But what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go to the panel, see if we can get some questions and comments for you. So I'm gonna start with Sister Linda. Sister Linda, can you unmute mute, please?
Yes, I can. And thank you for coming, because I've learned a lot just listening to you. And now, look, I'm 61 years old, and I hip hop because my child, she loves the hip hop, but I've never really listened to it. But that's why I wanted to come on tonight, because I wanted to hear the perspective that you were coming from. And it's very interesting. But I do have a couple, one, just one quick question for you, because you said you like to incorporate the history of it. And then you, in the background, I know I heard your daughter or your son or child. So my question to you is, do you have anything on their level that you have incorporated hip hop with the culture? And how old is your, first of all, is your child that was in the background?
Wait a minute. So you're asking, do I have music that I use or have that is appropriate for my child?
No, yes, kind of, sort of. But I'm saying more the lyrics.
Right. Music of lyrical content that's appropriate for my child.
Yes.
So my children are not my audience when I
Okay.
make. Yeah, my children are not my audience when I make music. Do I use rap music for my children to engage them in other things? Of course. And
Great.
they have rap music for children that, you find on YouTube. That's like rapping ABCs and rapping 1, 2, 3s and stuff,
Yes,
like,
yeah, that's what I was kind of asking first. If you had toddlers, do you start off with them? Because I think it was a comment, you meet them where they are and you take them where you want them to go. So I was saying, for toddlers, do you do anything with rap music, like you said, with the ABCs or just the basics?
me personally, I don't create that type of music, but would I speak to children about hip hop culture in general? Absolutely. I've spoken to like elementary students about this is what hip hop is, because one thing I do think that children need to know about the music and the culture, no matter what they listen to, is that it is a culture and that
Correct.
it is something that has roots and it's very powerful. And as they get older, if they were to come across a teacher like me, there might be a teacher that would explain to them later that its power has caused it to have such attention that it's been co-opted. And it's up to people like you who love it to know what it really is. You see what I'm saying? So that it doesn't one day become something that we see it becoming, and everybody's like, oh my God, what is rap music? That there has to be a solution. So you have to educate, you have to teach people this is what this is, yo. This is actually very big. There's a document that I like to use by a woman named Dr. Cheryl E. Keyes, and she shows a diagram that chronicles the origins of all African diasporic musical traditions. And it incorporates everything from bebop to jazz to swing to gospel to anything you can think of. And on that lineage is hip hop. Hip hop is on that lineage. So, unfortunately, because of the narrative of what it has become since we would argue since a time period of about the 90s at its height, you're talking about a time period too in hip hop music and culture where you can watch shows like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air right now, and you can see him have a Malcolm X poster in his room, or you can see him wear a Malcolm X hat or chain. You can watch movies, you can watch TV shows, you can watch so much of popular culture that was influenced by revolutionary culture at a sweet time in hip hop culture. And then it shifted. It shifted. It shifted. It was a big shift. It was a huge shift. We couldn't wait to go to an HBCU at a certain time period. You know why? Because what we saw on TV. You know
Right.
what I'm saying? Because of what we saw on TV. We couldn't wait. We couldn't wait. We couldn't wait to do a lot of things that was very Afrocentric and very accepted and very popular and healthy in some ways. You feel me? Healthy in some ways. And then you see a shift.
Right.
Some people would say that the riot scared the SHIT out of the music industry because they start seeing how powerful rap music could be, because you got people like Ice Cube and Ice-T and folks that got together and made a rap song that never even they let be let out. They never even let the song out because they saw how powerful it was going to be, because they had already called it. NWA had already released the song. Ice-T had already talked about the police. They had already called it and told y'all that the police keep messing with us. We're going to end up doing something about it. But I don't think as artists, they really thought that we was going to do something about it.
Right.
The LA
And
stood up
then he
and scared
played
the
a
crap
little,
out the
he
music
played
industry.
a small amount of, I think it was called Black August. It was I mean, the music, I like that, but I was trying to hear the lyrics. Is there any way that you could play a little bit more of that so I can understand the lyrics? Because
Yeah.
the music was beautiful.
He might be able to play it. If he can't, I can tell you about it. It don't matter. The
Well, what
music is
I could
about
do,
the people.
Sister Linda, I could
Yeah.
send that video to you.
Okay,
I
please.
will just send
Because
it to
I
you.
wanted to hear the lyrics to it because the music was beautiful. I like that. the
Oh
whole
yeah, I
sound.
like yeah
But see,
that
I
beat
always, but
that.
I and I tell my daughter, because she likes music, but I say we need to hear what you're listening, what the words are saying.
Yeah. I talk
Yeah.
how I talk, but I talk about positive things. You know
Great.
what I'm saying? I talk about positive things, and that song's about our revolutionaries like Matuzu Asada, Jonathan, and George Jackson, and celebrates that holiday of Black Awesome. So that song is, I love that song, and performing it is fun. It's fun. We have a great time.
Good, good. Okay.
Yeah,
Have you
thank you for your
let me
question.
now because we're moving into the age of technology, have you incorporated anything about STEM with the rap, with your rap music?
No, most of my music is about struggle and liberation.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I do
Yes.
struggle and liberation. When I talk to the people, you know, in the scholarly capacity, I'm talking about this. You know, STEM, you can use STEM in hip hop though. There are people
Okay.
who use STEM in science, you know, and they have what's called science genius battles where students take science concepts and they make raps out of them and then compete to see who has the best science rap. And I've been to those, which have been amazing and fun, and students really get into it. That was
It's
up in,
like
yeah,
it.
that was in a different city, but it was fun. It was amazing. Yeah. So yeah, science and hip hop can be used in any subject matter, in any capacity that a teacher is willing to be open to express, you know, and it depends on their connection to the students. Because at the end of the day, what we do want are teachers who care about our students. This is also a part of using Afrocentricity, is being able to connect to your students in a way that hopefully y'all have in common to some core. Because hip hop is so big and so diverse that
Right.
sometimes these teachers listen to rap music too. And secretly, they know the words to the Cardi B song. You know what I'm saying? Or they sing it when they play karaoke with their girlfriends on Saturday. So there's also an opportunity for everybody, peace, to build authentic connection as well. You know what I mean? Between teacher and student in a healthy way that's very authentic through the music. Through the music.
You're right. Yeah. In fact, my sister is an assistant principal, and that's all she listens to is rap music. She keeps telling me that she keeps trying to explain things to me also. So that's why one reason why I definitely wanted to listen to you tonight.
Yeah, right on.
Okay. Thanks, Sister Linda. Brother Joe.
Sir, appreciate your presentation, sister.
Right on.
I'm a retired educator myself. I grew up with Brother AK in Compton. We've been partners forever. Anyway, you said you went to Crenshaw. What year did you come out of there?
I can't tell you. I went there though, and I finished.
I knew a few people that worked there. I've been knowing Garrett forever.
Okay.
I knew Frierson and Brother Shabazz, the math teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, I know them brothers a long time. And I also attended UCLA. I don't tell you when.
I just graduated. I will say that. I just graduated, so I'm a newbie on that tip.
I stayed in Dykstra and all of that
Right on.
back in the early 70s. So,
Right on. Right on.
getting to the subject, like the sister was saying, well, first of all, I'm old school. I'm jazz and old soul music from back in the day.
Yeah.
As far as the content of what I like to listen to back
Yeah.
then,
Yeah.
I loved Curtis Mayfield. People were putting down some consciousness, James Brown.
Yeah.
Out here and Billie Holiday and
Yeah.
the Blue Notes and all of that. That's what I like. Although I used to dance to the other stuff, but when I was seriously on my mind, I would check. So, you know what? Why don't you check out your mind? It's been with you all the
Right on.
time. The
I
darker
love all of that. You know, I listen. Hey, we
the
have this in common.
look
We
at
have this in common.
With hip hop and rap, and first of all, are they under the same umbrella or is it separate music between hip
So
hop and
I love this question. The way that I think about it is hip hop speaks to the culture. and it incorporates the music. Rap is the music. When you refer to rap, you're talking about rap music. You're talking about words that are spoken, that are being repeatedly said or said at a fast, rapid pace. You're talking about lyrics and words and music. But when you talk about hip hop, in my opinion, you talk about the culture. You're talking about rap, DJing, breakdancing, knowledge of self. You're talking about, I would even argue, a sixth principle that I say is entrepreneurship that we should adopt. You know what I mean? But you're talking about all of the elements of the culture in all of its entirety, not just rap music. So that's the difference in my brain between rap and hip hop.
Continuing on, I'd like to make a couple of comments. You know, I love the beats and the music, although I can't understand what they're saying. The same thing with reggae, and Brother Roscani has tried to help me out with that. But I would tell all the people that are in those venues, I wish they would publish the words too, so you can read along with. Because I'm a
They
historian,
used to.
so
They
I'm
used to.
yeah. Well, that's the only way I'm gonna understand what's going on.
You
See the word.
gotta listen harder. You got to listen harder. It's
So
there, you know, you
I
can
do
hear.
on this part, they all a lot of them take the first beginning of the songs that I grew up with, and then they lead into what they're doing. I did pick that up.
Okay.
Oh man, they stole our stuff to make this. But anyway,
Okay.
that's where I am as far as all that goes, and I would love to be able to understand what they were saying. Especially the revolutionary type of music you were talking about.
Yeah.
Actually, Kendrick Lamar is one of my former students, and
Wow, that's awesome.
I don't know what he's saying, but I know he's out there. I know
But
he's,
it's good.
but
It's good. No, it's good. It's very good what he's saying. It's really
daughter
good
trying
there.
to explain it to me one time. He was on some palm tree or something. I'm like, no, what does that got to do with anything?
You're so funny. I
But anyway,
mean, hey, you know, what's honest is that it's a frequency. It's a frequency. It's a certain vibration. It's a certain vibration of music and song. You know what I'm saying? And if you listen to your if you're used to listening to music at a certain frequency and vibration, that's what you listen to. You know, it's what appeals to you, it's what you can resonate with, it's what you can connect to. Hip hop music is a different frequency, just like rock or jazz, you know what I'm saying? Or classical music, you know, it's a frequency. It's a frequency. Some will say that it's so strong that it can uninate you for days and time, and it may time seem it's still, you know what I'm saying? But nevertheless, it's still a vibe, you know. So if you don't rock with it, you don't rock with it. I can dig it.
All right, sister, appreciate you. I'm gonna go to the next next person.
All right, thanks, Brother Hendrick. Okay, Professor
Yeah,
Rock.
thank you.
Appreciate what's been said, if I understand correctly, and I agree with the discussion so thus far, comments by Brother Historian Hendrick and museum entrepreneur and curator Linda out of Florida. I just have a few questions. First of all, I want to say asante, which is Swahili, but thank you for you being on the program and for your wealth of knowledge that you share with young people and your encouragement as far as them lifting their consciousness through, as you say, using hip hop as a methodology of teaching. You say pedagogy as a method of teaching. And so when you say, rap, you know, they like to say that hip hop started with was popularized by the Sugar Hill Gang, the first one of the first ones. And we used to go by and we say, hey, kids can't do this, but they can remember that song. You can hear the kids going up and down. So we said that. And when you say it's a culture that speaks to liberation and I think you said liberation and struggle. You know, when I go back into music, even in the 60s, I go back further. Rap, I can go back to Rudy Ray Moore as far as rap. It was comedy rap or sexual explicit rap. I can go back to Isaac Hayes. He had a lot of Ike's rap, it was a love rap. When you say, rap is not the only dimension of hip hop. They say it's an infusion of Latino sounds, Caribbean sounds, of different sounds. I think the brother that said it was from the song "It Wasn't Me." He had an African guy singing with him. I forget his name, Iggy or something like that. But my point is that when you say it's a culture, how do you define culture?
Yeah, so great question. First and foremost, I think that culture is expressed in a variety of things. It's expressed through actions like dance and song and dress and language, but it's also expressed through historical identity. What have you experienced as a collective body of blank such type of people that shapes a cultural identity because of collective experiences? I'm also talking about collective ideas. How do we think about things? How do we see the world? Well, we are coming from a point of reference that is based in visions of Tupac riding down the streets of Rosecrans and Imperial Highway. How do I see the world? How am I understanding the police driving by? When Ice Cube talks about today was a good day, how do I contextualize my mother having enough food in the refrigerator to cook me a decent breakfast? You know what I'm saying? So there's things that I'm also thinking about in terms of collective ideals and experiences that we all share and go through. So the expression of those types of things can manifest in a variety of ways. This to me would be an indicator of culture. Some type of collective experience and collective identity.
Yeah, but then again, when you think of culture, you only think of people with an ideology or philosophy that they deify and that they develop realizations about. And so my point is that, like Dr. Yusuf Ben would say, create people. People create
God. Gods don't create people. People create gods. That's what you said.
Yeah, okay.
Where do you see that we may not be saying the same thing? Do you assume that hip hop have no identity in that sense? No right to claim such a stronghold in terms of its contribution to something like that expression of culture?
I'm not saying it don't. I'm asking you, what is it?
Oh, what is it? Well, as I mentioned, it's a variety of expressions.
Well,
it's expressed, huh?
That's my point. Let me just ask you another.
It's a variety of expressions. Hip hop. No, let me say this. Hip hop is so powerful because hip hop is not monolithic. Hip hop is so diverse in its expression. It's just as diverse as creation itself. We are all African diaspora people on this call, but we are all coming from various points of references, ages, genders, maybe sexual identities, religious backgrounds, and ethnicities. So hip hop is just as diverse as the people are. So there's many expressions of its cultural identity. We come together and share are certain things in common that we do reserve in hip hop related spaces, like music on a drum beat, for instance, like syncopated chant, like improvisation, like,
But we've always had music, even with
our voices. It's a part of who we are as African people. It's a part of our identity.
All groups have music. Chinese have music, Japanese have music. Different ethnic groups have different music. I'm not getting
absolutely
music part, because if hip hop's a culture, it's more than music.
Hip hop's a culture is more than music. It's because it's a music that is a reservoir for the culture. Because you're talking about a culture that has been under attack. You're talking about a culture that has been in a disadvantage. You're talking about African diasporic traditions that have been suppressed in so many dimensions of the way. That you have different places that they become spaces that are safe, like Quilombos of the time of our ancestors who would run away to maroon societies and Native American communities. You have to have spaces to be free. And hip hop is one of those. But
a lot of hip hop is not about freedom or struggle, you know, because it has, like you said, a variety. It's about different things. I mean,
but many of us have that in common. We are all people of color who are all marginalized, usually people who have been oppressed people. That is one of the things we share, no matter where we are in the world, is our oppression.
I appreciate what you said, but what I'm asking you is that, you know, we would see hip hop artists drinking 40s in music videos, going down the street and cars, hipping and hopping and doing things like this. Then you have them popularizing drugs. Many of them are into that today. You have a lot of violence among them fighting East Coast, West Coast, this group. Then you have whites like Vanilla Ice and a couple other white rappers that have not went through the struggles that we have went through as a black people. And they claim to be hip hop artists. My point is that what is the morals and ethics of, if it's a culture, what is the moral and ethical background, or do we have one, from the standpoint of not just singing or rapping or dressing the way you think it, you think is reflective of your life, but what about what you want it to be, what you want life to be about? You know, let me give you an example. Many musics, and when it's coming up, as Brother Henry was saying, love songs, dance songs, they had a goal, a love, a relationship. You could dedicate a record on the radio to your lady, you know, a Marvin Gaye song, a love song, you know, I Love You Forever, you know, Brenda Holloway, BF, and all that. So a lot of these hip hop songs, it's hard to dedicate, you know, to people. And like you say, you, profanity is not new because a lot of the early rappers, H. Rap Brown, if you listen to his early rapping, and Eldridge Cleaver, as well as myself, Dr. Karanga, we all use profanity to get people's attention. We're very graphic. You know, Michael Zinzin, you know, he'd jump up and say, let's kill the police, you know, and all that, you know, to get people's attention, probably, because he wasn't going to do that. But the point is, it's a captivating thing. When we look at hip hop, because of its diversity, it's not centralized. There's no god of hip hop that dictates to everybody else what they should be doing or be about, like Jesus to the Christians, or Muhammad did to Muslims, or Abraham did to Jews, Santeria, whatever, you understand. Even though being American, you know, by habit, but having to choose to be African. And I see hip hop as a choice to express yourself and things of this nature. As a professor for 34 years, when I first started out, I used profanity to wake students up. Well, I was young. And I just came out the Black movement. And this was 1970. I just came out of, you know, I was in the 65 rebellion. We don't call it a riot and all of that. But along with your uncle, he was a little behind me. And we used profanity. You know, if you go listen to some of the old discussions, then we began to say, you know, we don't need to use that. And just like music, like hip hop is popular now, what is a sustaining energy? Where is it going to come from? And not just be popular culture or a desire to make it something that is equivalent to. I remember they were saying something like Tupac Shakur was the next Malcolm and all of that. So you understand what I'm trying to say. So I'll let you respond.
Yeah, I love talks like this. So first and foremost, thank you for your analysis, because that's a wonderful analysis. The first thing I want to say is that you are true in everything that you have said. There is so many different things of hip hop that is in contradiction to one another. There are songs that are sexist, and there are songs that are empowering to women. There are songs that are homophobic. There are open LGBTQ rappers. There are so many different things that exist at the same time, at the same space with hip hop, that it's a wonderful space of contradiction. One of the things that I do want to say to you, though, and I think this is interesting, and I like to talk funky, is that I don't assume that hip hop has to have a god, for instance, or a moral, or some type of I don't want to say esoteric, but some type of spiritual guide. Me personally, I'm not driven by hip hop as my god. What I am driven by is hip hop as my cultural counterpart to the way that I choose to show up in the world. If I want to disassociate myself with that which is American, and I may not be rooted in an African-based spiritual identity, then hip hop would be my natural alternative. Fortunately, I don't think hip hop should be your God. I actually think that God should be your God. And me personally, I am a priestess of the Orisha tradition. So I wouldn't assume that hip hop should be that. I do think it's dope to listen to music, though, that people make that's about, you know, spiritual things. You know what I'm saying? I think that's amazing. I think that's a beautiful part of the culture. And there is hip hop music that expresses those types of sentiments. Kanye West made Jesus Walks possible and a hit at a time where people didn't even think that you could talk about spirituality in a pop culture type of format. But I don't think that hip hop has to have a god for it to be still a counterculture and still a rich expression of beingness. And African diasporic culture is as vast as African diasporic people. So you're going to see many elements of hip hop conserve all of that, all of what is valuable to many of us as Black and Brown people. It, at its finest, at its root, at the cornerstone of where it was created, it was like a diamond that was created under pressure, that was created at a time, as you may already well know, where that particular area of the South Bronx was under attack by the impact of white flight. And what happens when you leave us alone, when we are in deplorable conditions, where we have nothing else to do to occupy our time? We start to fight amongst each other and do things amongst each other. But there is something very passionate and very rich in our traditions of musical things that we have grown up listening to. Like the brother said, I listen to soul music. Well, that is present in hip hop music. All of that has impacted much of what hip hop is. Why? Because hip hop became a avenue, a space, a vehicle to allow these young people to come together and to be able to bring all of that sauce into one pot and to be able to call something that they can be proud of, a reflection of who they were. They gave them a greater identity than no one in the world would have assumed that, oh my God, this is what's happening. This is what the young people are doing with everything that we've taught them. This is what the Black Liberation has produced. This is what Marvin Gaye has produced. This is what Nina Simone has produced. This is what Stevie Wonder has produced. This is what Malcolm X has produced. This is what the young people's iteration is of the traditions that have been passed down to them. See, what I do think, and I argue in my one avenue of research, is that hip hop is a continuation of using music in the hip hop, in the struggle for our freedom, much in the way that freedom songs was used in our civil rights movement. We have to stop disassociating the value of the magnitude of what hip hop has contributed to our movement. And one of those things that we should look at, I hope, and I want people to consider, is the role of conscious hip hop music, that it has been extremely impactful, where people have used it in so many different variety of ways. So again, hip hop is not divorced or separated from a larger tradition of many things in our generation. But what we do need to do is embrace it and recognize it as such, and then be able to use it to empower the young people that have also embraced it, and be able to redirect the conversation of the direction of where it's going, because its impact is undeniable. But we have never really contextualized hip hop to be able to look at it. I know she heard that mama's talking her stuff. Talk yourself. Yeah, baby, mama. We haven't really gave hip hop its just due. That's my job, though. That's what I spend my time researching and learning about. Excuse me, so that I can give it its just due.
I can understand your passion and as an artist and as a professor of hip hop. Yeah, I can understand that. But my question is.
Don't let the passion fool you, like Bishop Magic Don Juan. Don't let the passion fool you. Don't let these diamonds and these furs and these jewels fool you. Now that the truth is what it is the history of the culture. It is the revolutionary context that I know that the culture has been attributed to, much in the same way that we say that Malcolm X has inspired the Revolutionary Action Movement and the Black Liberation Army. These are the parents, literally, of hip-hop artists. Fannie Shakur is the mother of Tupac Shakur, one of the greatest icons and examples and exemplars of hip-hop music, and all of his diversity and all of the richness and all of the elements of who he was.
I'm not arguing about that aspect of hip-hop as far as some of the artists, KRS and Public Enemy, and
yeah. See, I didn't even mention them.
Some of the other, there was a message in the music,
right? But
then at the same time, you have people that is turned off to hip hop because of people like Lil Luther. And that sex thing he be doing, and and Too Short, and let me finish, so it takes away from the ethical, philosophical, and liberational perspective that you have. And people give Lil Wayne an Academy Award,
right?
But he didn't sing a liberation song, you know.
The question is why? Why do you think that is? Well, if I were to pose the question, the why would be, first and foremost, you started the history of hip hop music at the beginning of the Sugar Hill Gang. There would be some people that would say, no, you did not. Hip hop didn't start when it was commercialized. It didn't start when it hit the mainstream. That is not where hip hop started. Hip hop started in the basements of the Boogie Down Bronx. You feel me? And then one day someone realized that you could package it. You could sell it. You could market it. It had potential to be a product. Much of what it is that we do has been commodified in every aspect of African identity in America. It has been commodified. So hip hop music, to start it at the beginning of the Sugar Hill Gang, is almost a slap in the face to the beginning of its genuine origins. Because from the beginning, the people who have benefited from the proceeds of it as a commodity have controlled it as a commodity. And they have manipulated it over time to be the most marketable and profitable commodity that they could possibly make it to be. And the connections, for instance, between the prison industrial complex and hip hop music and culture is gross. It's egregious. It's atrocious. It's so insane that it's undeniable how hip hop has been co-opted and corrupted to be a vehicle, to be a channel, to be a vessel, to benefit not the people who create it, not the communities that benefit off of its destruction, but to benefit the pockets of the powers that be, that control the media and the narratives and the images and the concepts and the stereotypes and the things that you think of when you go into all Black spaces, or when you go into the towns of South Africa, or you go into the back lots of Mozambique. This is a real thing. So it benefits so much of the powers that are in control to have hip hop look as a disassociated, chaotic platform. That is void of any value, especially cultural value, especially linguistic value, especially visual value. It's a horrible thing. It wants to think all of the negative that it could possibly muster, because as long as it lets you get into that, it will keep you ignorant of its potential. It will give you ignorant. It will keep you away from the revolutionary thinkers, the people that you mentioned, the KRS-Ones and the Commons and the Mos Defs and the Talib Kweli's. You know, it will keep you more in focus of the Lukes and the Two Life Crews and the Two Shorts and the, you know, don't get me the cussing up in here. You feel me? So it's it's a part of the control. You have to always ask yourself, where's the money? It tells you who gets to really make the plays. The artists themselves end up becoming complacent to the power's dictation of what makes money. So if you want to make money, you have to dance to their tune. You have to still mimic the things that they have dictated is what is marketable and what is profitable. And unfortunately, we don't control the media markets. And those that do, they might spice things up a little bit in the way that they show up as artists. Beyonce and Jay-Z do it all the time. You know what I mean? But they have more control of their narrative as artists. You know, so it's a valuable perspective, and I'm not discrediting your assessment, my brother. But I'm here to challenge us in all things when it comes to what we think about hip hop, because unfortunately, that sentiment is a common sentiment. It's a common sentiment. It's a narrative that is predictable. Not to say it's a discredit to you as an individual or as a scholar yourself. Don't get me wrong, and please don't. I don't want to come off in a rude, but the truth is that it's a part of us not really understanding, I think, the breadth of hip hop. But I do want to say this, that the contradictions within it is what also adds to its sensationalism. It is what adds to its dynamic applicability in the classroom, because you're going to have such contradiction and conflict within the culture that it forces people to have to wrestle with things that don't always make sense, and to be okay with being in spaces that are sometimes in opposition, and still at the end of the day, dance into the same vibration, because it's the music that makes us a unit. You know what I'm saying? It's the music, it's the culture, it's the style of dress, it's the language, it's the affiliations, it's the connotations that we use, it's the colloquialisms that we express, it's the identity that we really embody when we are together that makes us hip hop. So it's okay to not always agree. It's okay for it to sometimes be in contradiction. It's a part of who we are as a people.
Well, yeah, there's contradictions in every culture. But the point is that, you know, we can't go back and say that rapping really started in prisons.
I'm with it. It didn't happen in a vacuum. That we can agree on. It didn't happen in a vacuum. It didn't happen just, these young people just created something, huh?
And dress codes, you know, and things like that. Yeah. But the point is that it's a good discussion.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate all that you're doing to educate people through hip hop, through that liberation struggle, because it seems as if the liberation struggle is not about freedom with hip hop for the most part. Some of it is, but some of it is freedom to be yourself.
Yeah.
What you choose to be, not be yourself.
Yeah.
You know, make yourself somebody. And so that's a beautiful thing.
I want to add something, if I may. And I see you, brother. I want to add something, if I may. I also want to bring attention to the idea that I mentioned before about COINTELPRO and its role in hip hop music and culture. It's a reason why much of what we listen to now is on the radio, and why the culture doesn't look like the culture that it looked like in the early 90s, in the late 80s. There's a reason for all of this. But I also want to say that COINTELPRO, some people will argue that it's alive and well in hip hop culture, that it's a part of the reason why we get so many of the murders and assassinations of these hip hop artists lately. There's something to be said about the dynamic of the culture because it's always under attack. And anything that you see in our struggle that has been of value to us has been used somehow in another in a way to co-opt us. You feel what I'm saying? It's been used as a target that can potentially cause us problems. But I just want to just highlight that because the deaths of these young rappers, it's a thing that you cannot necessarily ignore. And 50 Cent just did a huge documentary on a bunch of these rappers because there's so many of them. But people will say that a lot of these young men are being targeted, that they're being that they're under surveillance, that there are some things that are happening with them that, you know, unfortunately we might not find out until 20 years from now, you know, until the dockets are found in the secret files like they did before. But it's a thing. It's a thing. Hip hop culture is around the world looks totally different than in what it does in America. You know, if you and I were to go to Uganda, you're gonna see hip hop in a way that you ain't never seen it before. If we're gonna go to Cuba and Puerto Rico, if we go to parts of Asia, Korea, you see what I'm saying? Hip hop don't look nothing. It looks different everywhere you go. Everywhere you go. So this is a part of the context that I'm coming from when I'm talking about hip hop culture. It's a global phenomenon with huge ripples around the world because of the authentic connection that hip hop has to these African diasporic roots. It touches everybody. It touches every single body, every single group of
I appreciate your in-depth knowledge of the subject matter.
Okay.
Seem to be well studied, that's for sure. Go ahead, Brother Hembrick.
Hey, so I enjoyed that commentary. Appreciate it. I wanted to ask you about this brother who I used to check out on YouTube. I think he's from the Mississippi area. He used to be a banger, and now he's a rapper. His name is David something, and he did an album called The God Box. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, he used to be thuggish, and he went through a transformation with his rap, and he's really pulling the drawers off a lot of the okey doke fried ice cream that our people been sucking up. I call it drinking Kool-Aid, and he has a nice album called The God Box. It's pulling the drawers off of that too, how we've been indoctrinated, since Rome and all of that. But anyway, I wanted to see what was your take on him, but I see that you don't know him. I'm the person I'm talking
Yeah, I'm not familiar, but I'll check them out. If you, I think there's a chat. Is there a chat on here? If there's a way for you to put it in the chat, I could definitely follow up and check out
God
then.
Box.
It's God Boxed. Okay, on YouTube. Yeah, I'll
Well,
check it out.
I
I'll
mean,
check
that's
it out.
kind of his
How do you
album.
like them though? You like what he has to say?
I love this conversation.
Okay.
I say the rap I couldn't understand, but
Okay.
on his shows where he's being interviewed, he's really putting it down, without rapping. He's just talking about, the Kool-Aid we've been drinking and where we need to go as a people. So,
Yeah, right on.
right.
I
So,
hear. I hear. I hear.
yeah.
I hear. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'll check it out.
Yeah, check him out. See what you think.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Sister Linda, anything else?
No, I don't have anything else. I'm just still listening.
Okay, good. Professor Ra?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good. I'm hip
Okay.
hop now.
I don't want to talk about it no more. Don't get me started, y'all. Let me keep it real. I didn't know that you could go to school for this. So once I got a taste for it, it's the thing that got me through school. If I didn't do this, then I don't know what other subject I really would have been able to tolerate. Because, you know, people always say, and you've been in the academy for years, for decades, and you've paid your dues. You know the nature of the academy. You can't sit with something unless you got some kind of connection to it. It becomes hard for you to be, you know, exposed to something for years at a time if you ain't got no passion for it. So once I got a taste for this, I just never let it go. So I, y'all, you know, y'all right, y'all teasing, but y'all right. I love doing my homework because that's all I did was just read hip hop stuff all the time. And so the scope was wide. You feel me?
We had one of the first classes in hip-hop at Cal State Long Beach.
Okay, right on.
Graduated from Temple.
Right on.
I can't remember his name right now. He's in Denver now, but mm-hmm. he's in Boulder or something. And mm-hmm. he did it on the special topics called Hip Hop Culture. But they have books out on hip hop.
Yeah.
And that's bonds in different places. Because I got about
okay. Can I ask you one other question too? Because I know it's getting late, and I always go back to the youth. Have you heard about the first rap that I heard? I don't know if it's considered hip hop or rap, but it was Nas, the father, not that stupid son of his. It was called Nas, Be What You Want to Be. You remember that one?
Yeah. I know I can be if you work hard at it.
Right. See, that's what I was trying to think of when I was saying rap incorporated with children in college.
You can find rap for anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can find raps for deaths. You can find raps for weddings. You can find raps for having babies. You can find raps for, you know, meeting your loved one. It's rap music is so extensive. You can never, and it's 50 years old this year. This is why this is so deep, because it's been around long enough for people to be able to have a discipline around it, to be able to study it. You feel me? 50 years this year. It's the anniversary of hip hop. So I know that you might be hip hopped out, but you might hear a lot of hip hop SHIT for the rest of the year. And I feel you on the curse words. You know, I don't necessarily feel, you know, a way about it. I could use or not use cursing, but I do think cursing is a part of the culture. And I hate to admit it, you know, but it's a part of, like, y'all mentioned the, you know, what Dolomites and the, you know, Dozens and the street talking and all that flavor. It's always been full of cussing. When I think of cussing, I think of Last Poets. The first time I saw Last Poets in real life, they did that, niggas. My mouth dropped. I couldn't believe they said that. Niggas is scared of revolution. Niggas love to fuck. Niggas fuck. I couldn't believe it. I ain't lying. Now you know where to lie at. The Last Poets. These was y'all peers up on the stage, still talking they talk, popping it like hot grease. So I was like, oh, okay. So it's a part of what you just prefer, man. You know what I'm saying? It's like sometimes you like it, sometimes you don't. Sometimes it's the sound of anti the man, you know what I'm saying, or anti the masses, or anti that old generation, or whatever, you know what
okay,
I mean.
Okay, so when is your next piece coming out?
My next piece, personally.
Yes, when is yours coming out? Yes,
2-3-2-3.
Oh, 2023.
Thank you for asking. Yeah, you're ahead of the game. We just put the final touches on it today. Actually, I sent some other email the other day to confirm my last little minute of edits. So we're gonna put out a project called So Close. It'll be my next video. 2-3-2-3. Check it out on Facebook. I'm gonna release it there first, and then on YouTube.
2-3-2-3.
2-3-2-3. Yep. On the 3rd. It's a Friday.
I can interject something right quick. I found a brother's name. His name is David Banner.
David Banner.
Yeah. So now you know. Okay.
Yeah. What did we say about him?
You know, his cut the God Box.
David Banner is the God Box.
Yeah, that's David.
Oh, David Banner's okay. You know, David Banner. Let me say this. I've seen things about David Banner, but I don't really necessarily all the way understand his source of or his political frameworks. I'm not all the way versed with his, political standpoints, where he's coming from or what he's really advocating for at the end of the day. But I like that he uses his platform to engage people in some real conversation, because he definitely is an artist that could be talking about anything, but he chooses to talk about things that are at least provocative for folks, But yeah, I like David Banner.
At least it changed from his earlier days.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I said I appreciate you using the platform for sure.
Right, appreciate you. I'm gonna have to talk to your uncle about this. I tried to.
Oh God, I hope that it's great. Listen, I love the feedback, but let me be honest, let's keep having a conversation, because it's a part of us having an opportunity to engage a certain level of our culture and our community, because our young people have always been the source of our liberation and all struggles. They've always started with our youth. And if you see the way that the music is influencing our youth, it's going downhill slowly, but at a very, very real pace, between suicides, deaths because of fentanyl and drug abuse, domestic violence, all types of things that are promoted in the music right now. Hip hop is absolutely influencing our young people in a direction that none of us want, that none of us want. So I just hope that we can use something that is familiar to us all, because it is 50 years old, that we might be able to connect to one another intergenerationally, multiculturally, multi-ethnically, and in multiple spaces. So thank y'all for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And when we end, could you just stay on for a few seconds? I need to ask. Professor Rock, is there anything particular we got for Monday?
I'll call you in the morning.
Okay. All
Well,
right.
I'm gonna talk to Joe about doing a book review on some books he got in the library. See if he feel like doing that. He'll
I
be
want to
out.
show. Okay, well, I want to show what we got going on next Wednesday for the CN show. Let me make sure it's there. Okay, there. All right, let me share the screen. So here we go. Got Brotherhood coming on next Wednesday on the 25th. He's going to be talking about game design. It's a class that he teaches at Compton Early College. And he's going to be talking to us about different facets of that. Then we have a special show on the 29th. Priestess Victorious is coming back from Ghana. So she's going to be in Ghana. It's going to be 12 p.m. Pacific time on the 29th. That's a Sunday. So she'll be back on with us. She was on before. But that should be a good one. We're going to be talking about the Black family, the state of the Black family. Okay, Sister Linda, you have something?
No, I have nothing at this time, no.
Okay. So I appreciate everybody this evening. Dr. J, excellent, excellent. And
Okay.
I definitely want to have you back to have some more discussions. I had a
Right.
few things I wanted to talk about, but we can get into that later.
Yeah, next time. Okay.
Your brother, Roger Key, why
Yeah.
don't we just go with raising Black children in a racist dynamic for next two Monday?
Okay.
And we'll
That'd
have
be
a
good.
round table discussion on
Okay.
methods of raising Black children in a racial, racist dynamic.
Okay. We'll do it. So let me just say this. We got to keep doing this. This is wonderful.
Yeah.
Dr. J, we got to have you back.
It'll be my pleasure
Yeah.
to be back anytime.
Okay, and then also I wanna hear your new track. You said 23/23. What's the date now?
February 3rd.
February 3rd. I'm gonna be looking out for that.
Yeah. And she
Okay.
has a little thing in her closet. Yeah,
Okay.
February 3rd, 2023. We're gonna be dropping the video, and it'll be on YouTube, and it'll be on Facebook. But yeah,
Excellent.
just be on the lookout. I can't wait. We've been
Yeah,
working hard.
want to check it out. All right. So thank you again. Thank you, Brother Hendrick.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sister Linda.
Thank
Thank you,
y'all for
Professor
hanging in
Ra.
there. Yeah.
And so we're going to say each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody have a good evening.
Right now, peace.